Well, Shannon, come on up and tell us what the Lord is doing in Greece.
Thanks. All right, perfect. Well, good afternoon, good evening. It's really good to be here, and it's nice to be in a place that we've never spoken at before. We've come to Oregon many times on our home tours, but this is the first time that we've been down here in Klamath Falls, so we appreciate the invitation to come. Usually,
this is the beautiful part of the state.
Hey, it's nice. I had a nice drive coming over. I enjoyed it.
Beautiful people.
Yes, I appreciate it. Usually I travel with more than just myself. You got 1/4 of the Herndon family tonight, so we had kind of a crazy schedule, and Josh ended up in California today speaking, and he's on his way back to Oregon right now. And we do have 2 kids. We have Karis, she's going to be 13 in October, and Caden is going to be 10 in June. And they're in Indiana with their grandparents right now because we came to the United States in April, which was of course during the school year, and so they had to finish the school year. They couldn't just drop out, and so I enrolled them there in the school in Morristown, Indiana. It's the little tiny farm town that my husband went to school in and graduated from, and they're attending school with their cousins, and they're having a blast. They actually finished this week, but they've been thrilled because we don't have school buses in Europe, you know, and so they just get taken by their parents. But here they've gotten to ride the big yellow school bus, and it has been thrilling to their souls. Every morning they eat their breakfast as fast as possible. That bus comes up and they are out the door with their cousins. They are so excited every day. So it's been fun to watch them have this time with their cousins. And Josh's sister and her family, they've been called by Nazarene World Missions, called by God, being sent by Nazarene World Missions to go to Africa and serve in the Cape Verde Islands. And so they're getting ready to go, and they're going to be heading out at the end of July. So this is kind of the last hurrah for the cousins to be together for one last summer before, you know, schedules get crazy. And so we've really been blessed to have time together with family, time that we didn't expect. And it's been really, really good. So tonight, I want to tell you about what God's been doing in Greece. And we served in Spain for 6 years, and then we have moved to Greece, and we've just been in Greece for 7 months, since September. So this is a really new ministry, and the Nazarene Church doesn't have any work in Greece. This is the first work of the Church of the Nazarene in Greece, and so we're really excited to be kind of pioneering that work and starting things off. And God is just moving in really fantastic ways. So tonight, the stories that I want to tell you are stories of people that we are ministering with and ministering to, but I wanted to kind of wrap it together in a story that you might be more familiar with, and that is the journey of Paul and his second missionary journey through Greece. And so we're going to start, and I don't know how good your Greek is, but there at the bottom you see the word Neapolis, and that is where Paul started his missionary journey. That is the modern day city of Kavala. Here we go. And Kavala is a beautiful city right by the sea. And this is where Paul would have come. And I can imagine how excited Paul must have been when he was arriving here in the city, because Greece at this point in time was part of the Roman Empire. And Paul is a Roman citizen. And so he's kind of walking into Greece feeling pretty confident that this is somewhere that he belongs. And he's got to be excited. And Paul was called to Greece by a dream. God spoke to him through a dream, and there was a man standing on the shore of Macedonia, and he was saying, come to us and share about God. And so Paul, he answered that call, and he came to Macedonia, which is northern Greece, and that is where he started his missionary journey. And I want to tell you about Nikoula. Now, Nikoula is a friend of ours that we have met in Greece. She is from Syria, and she has a 3-year-old son. And in Syria, we know that people are living in fear of ISIS, and there's a lot of bad things going on there. But there's one thing that we don't really know very often, and that's that there is a second enemy in Syria, and that is the Syrian mafia. The Syrian mafia is pretty smart, and they have figured out that they can make a lot of money off of ISIS coming to town. And so what the Syrian mafia does is they kind of stay a step ahead of ISIS, and when they know they're going to a city, the mafia moves in, and they go knocking on doors, and they kidnap kids. And so they will sell the children to ISIS, and the girls will be brides, and the boys are trained to fight. And so that's how the mafia is making their money. But they're not unreasonable folks, the mafia. You can buy your kids back. And the thing is, you have to have tens of thousands of American dollars. And Nikoula knows that if her 3-year-old son is kidnapped, she cannot pay to get him back. And it's with this in mind that she decides to leave Syria, to flee for safety, and they go across Turkey, they go across the sea, and they find their way to Thessaloniki, Greece. And at Thessaloniki, they find their way to a drop-in center that we run, and the drop-in center is run out of the church that we are partnering with and supporting, and it's the Free Methodist Church there. And the drop-in center provides a hot meal, a hot shower, and the ability to wash clothes for the refugees that are in Greece. And so Nikoula finds her way to the drop-in center, and she starts to make friends with folks, and she meets Maria. And Maria is the wife of the pastor. She's the pastor's wife. And she really starts to form a relationship with Nikoula, and she picks her up at the refugee camp and brings her to the drop-in center and takes her back in the evening. And over the course of a couple weeks, they really begin to form a really neat relationship. And Nikoula, though, starts experiencing something strange. She starts having dreams every single night about a man wearing a clerical collar. Now, she doesn't know why she's dreaming about a man with a clerical collar, but she thinks that it's Mike, Maria's husband. She's never met him. She doesn't know that he's the pastor of the church, but in her dream, she just feels like this must be Maria's husband. And in her dream, he keeps offering her water. She says, "No, I don't need water. Thank you very much." And he keeps offering it to her over and over again. And this is the dream that she has every night. So one day when Maria picks her up, she says, "Maria, I want to tell you something." She says, "I've been having dreams about your husband." Maria says, "Tell me about that." She says, no, Maria, you have to listen. She says, "Maria, I think it's your husband. In my dream, I feel like it's him, but he's wearing one of those collars that your priests wear here." And Maria says, "Oh, yes, a clerical collar." And Nikoula says, "Well, why would he be wearing that?" And Maria says, "Well, he's the pastor of the church. Then the drop-in center is held at our church, and so I suppose that's why in your dream he's wearing that collar." And Nikoula says, "Okay, well, another thing is that in my dream, he keeps offering me water over and over. And I tell him, 'No, I don't want water,' and he keeps giving it to me. Why would he do that? Why does he want to give me water?" And Maria, she gets a little emotional, and she says, "Well, you know, at the drop-in center, we want to meet your physical needs. We want to give you food and water, and we want to help you in that way." She says, "But more importantly, what we want to do is give you the living water of Jesus Christ." She goes, "And I think that in your dream, my husband is offering you the living water of Jesus." And it's amazing to see the similarity between Paul's journey and what's going on in Greece. And Paul was called to Greece through a dream where God spoke to him. And Nikoula, she's being spoken to through her dreams, and God is moving in her life. And we're really excited to watch what God is doing in Nikoula's life as she continues to come through the drop-in center. It's a real blessing, and we enjoy being part of it. Now, Paul, he can't stay in Neapolis. He has to keep moving because he's on a missionary journey. So he goes up to Philippi, which we know as Philippi. And Philippi is a wonderful city, and he goes there, and he goes on the Egnatia Odos, which is what you see here, and that's the Ignatian Way. That's the road that connects Constantinople, Istanbul, all the way to Rome for the Roman citizens. And so they take this road and they go into Philippi. Now, as they enter the city, they find places to stop and share what God is doing and the message that Paul is bringing to the Greek people. And there's always somebody to talk to. But more importantly, they go to the Roman Agora, that's the marketplace, and they buy their fruits and their vegetables because that's where your people are every day, day in and day out. And Paul is constantly looking for somebody to tell about God. But there's a problem while Paul is there, is that a teenage girl begins to follow him and make a lot of noise and cause problems. She's possessed by demons. And Paul puts up with her for quite a while. And I can imagine how Paul feels. I have a teenage daughter, almost. They can be pushy. I can imagine that Paul, after 24 hours, he's dealing with her. He's okay. He can put up with it. After 48 hours, it's probably getting a little bit old. And after the third day, he's had enough of this girl following him through the streets of Philippi, screaming out why he is there. And I don't know, I haven't stopped to count all the miracles that happen in the Bible, and I don't know how many happen out of sheer frustration. But at this point, Paul, he's had enough. And he reaches back and heals the girl of the demons that had been possessing her. And it's a wonderful miracle, but she's a slave, and her owners, they're not very happy about this because they've been making money off of her possession. And so they're angry, and they take Paul, and they beat him with rods, Paul and Silas, and they put them into jail. There we go. They put him into jail. But that's not going to stop Paul and Silas from praising God and singing and just being so excited about why they are there. But something amazing happens is that at midnight, God comes, and God does this amazing miracle and breaks the chains off of the walls and the doors, and he breaks the prisoners free. Paul and Silas could leave, but they don't. They stay there. And the jailer, he shows up, and he's sure that the prisoners are gone. Who would stay behind if they've been set free? And he's going to kill himself. And Paul cries out, "No, don't do that. We're all still here. We haven't gone anywhere." And the jailer and his wife, through the ministry of Paul, they come to know Christ. This is Ahmad. And we love Ahmad. We were out celebrating a Greek holiday that day, and so those are faces of people that are very dear to us. And you see our daughter, Karis, and our son, Caden, in there. If you think that the selfie problem is only here in the United States, it's not. Even Iranian youth take group selfies. And so Ahmad, he is from Iran. And things start to get really bad there, but it's still before the real refugee crisis happens, but it's still not good. And so Ahmad decides one day that he needs to leave. He can't stay anymore. It's not safe. And so he decides to pack up and leave. He comes to Greece looking for asylum. The problem is, nobody knows that there's a refugee crisis yet. He's come ahead of the wave of people. And so they don't know why he's there. They don't believe his story. So he is picked up by the police and he's put in jail. He's actually put into a jail underneath the police department. And he says, "But I haven't committed any crimes," but they don't really listen to him. And so they just hold him there, and he's fed and he has the clothes on his back, but he's in a dark cell underneath the jail with no light. And he's there for 2 years. And he tries to talk to the jailer every day and say, "Why am I here? I haven't done anything wrong. I just want to be safe." And he's not listened to. Well, after a while, all of a sudden, there's thousands of refugees coming into Europe, and it's just like this flood of people. And somebody finally says, "Oh, Ahmad, he was telling the truth." So they bring him out of this jail, and they put him into a different jail, but it's this one's kind of low security, and they listen to him for a little bit, and finally, they let him out. And they let him apply for asylum. And so he is free. And when I think about Paul and Silas, they have this miraculous thing that happens that sets them free from the jail. And really, Ahmad didn't have this miraculous freeing from the jail, but something miraculous did happen. And that's while he was in the jail for 2 years, he found Christ. And he became a Christian. And when Ahmad came out of that jail, he found his way up to Thessaloniki. And he found the church where we minister at. And he has become a part of our church family. And Ahmad is the one who on Sundays translates for our Farsi-speaking refugees that come. Any given Sunday, our church has about 15 nationalities attending. And so we've got a lot of translations going on. There's a lot of people who speak English. And so the pastor, Josh, or whoever is speaking, preaches in English. Off to the side over here, we've got the Greek translation happening. Right in here, we've got Ahmad translating for our Farsi speakers, and over here, we've got Arabic going on. And it's this amazing mixture of languages and people, and there's a lot of ministry going on, and it's so exciting to know that the Farsi speakers who are coming and attending church, they're hearing the good news of Christ through Ahmad, and he's the one translating. It's a real blessing to see how God is working in his life. Josh is doing a discipleship group on Sunday nights with young refugee men who have come to Christ. And Ahmad is one of those that's taking part in the discipleship group. And it's really a blessing to see what God is doing. You know, I'm not going to learn Farsi. I'm not going to learn Arabic. I have enough on my plate trying to learn Greek. But Ahmad, he already speaks Farsi. And he knows the culture. And he understands the people. And Ahmad is going to be our missionary into the refugee camps, ministering to those people who speak the Farsi language. And he is going to be an amazing missionary and part of the team. Well, Paul, he can't really stay in Philippi. He's had some problems, and he's also a Jew, so he can't stay. He needs to be in the Jewish quarter, so he moves just a little bit north of the city to the Jewish quarter, and that is where he can stay for a little bit. And he finds his way down to the river, and he meets a woman named Lydia. She is a businesswoman. We know her as a dealer of purple cloth, the Bible says, and she's down there. She's working and washing her clothes, and we also find out that through talking, Paul speaking with her, that she is a believer in God, and she is waiting for the Messiah to come. You see, she's hundreds of miles away from Jerusalem, and she doesn't know the whole story yet. She hasn't heard, so she's still waiting. She doesn't know that God has already sent his son. So I can imagine the conversation that she has with Paul sitting by the river here, and Paul says, I have to tell you something. You missed it, Lydia. Jesus, he already came. The Messiah's already been here. He came. He was born as a baby. He grew up among us. He had a beautiful ministry to the people, but he was beaten. He was crucified, and he died for our sins. But wait a minute, Lydia, it gets better than that. He was only dead for 3 days, and he rose from the dead, and he has met me on the road. I was walking, and he found me, and I was living a life that I wasn't supposed to be living, but he's changed me, and I've been sent to minister, and he is waiting in heaven for us. He's already come. Lydia, she is so excited. I can only imagine. And she jumps in the water right here. This is Lydia's baptism in Greece. And she jumps in the water and she says, I have to be baptized right now. And so Paul gets in the water with her and he baptizes Lydia and her family and friends right there in the water in northern Greece. And they become the first Christian converts in Europe. It's a beautiful story. This is Hamid, and he's playing soccer there with our son, Caden. And right there, a little bit, you see a little bit of Ahmad. We have a great sports ministry in Greece that we use baseball, flag football, basketball, a lot of sports to get to know Greek kids, but we're also using it in the refugee camps. And so this day, we went to a refugee camp to play some baseball. It turned into soccer. But when we arrived, there were about 300 sheep in this field. And we had to wait for the shepherd to move them out. And then the guys played the messiest game of football you could ever imagine, soccer. If you notice, Hamid is barefoot, and that is for a reason. He did not want to ruin his shoes in that field. But Hamid is a wonderful story of God's redemption in a person's life. Hamid is also from Iran. And Hamid has a complicated history because he was a part of Iran's black ops. So basically Iran's CIA. Hamid has done things and seen things that he will not talk about because he is ashamed. And things started to get bad in Iran, and he couldn't continue living the life he was living. And so he and his mom, Tina, they made the trip over, and they found themselves in Thessaloniki, found the drop-in center, and became involved in the church. And while they were attending church, they accepted Jesus Christ as their Savior, and they're both Christians. Hamid and Tina, knowing they wanted to make a proclamation that we have accepted Christ, they asked to be baptized, and they were baptized there in Thessaloniki in northern Greece, just like Lydia did. And it's a beautiful story of how God is moving. Hamid is also part of the Sunday night group that meets and does discipleship with Josh. He doesn't really speak great English yet, so he relies on Ahmad for translation, but God is doing great things. We had a group from the United States come, and they were with us, and Josh really wanted to take them to Philippi. It's only an hour and a half from where we live, and so he called Hamid because he thought, oh, Hamid should come with us, and he could share his story with this group. And so he called Hamid and said, I want you to come, and I'll pay for your food. I'll pay for you to get into Philippi. No problem. I'll cover your costs. I just want you to come and share with these people. And Hamid said, well, Pastor Josh, as he calls my husband, Pastor Josh, he says, I can't go. He says, because I have a Bible study tonight, and if I go with you, I'd miss my Bible study. So he takes it really seriously, and it's really amazing the insight that Hamid has into scriptures he's reading, and we're excited to see how God changes his life and works through him. Well, Paul, he can't stay in Philippi, he can't stay with Lydia, so he moves up to Thessaloniki. And Thessaloniki is this beautiful city on the sea. This is where we live now in northern Greece. And it's a fortified city. You can see the white tower there. It's an ancient city with walls that go all through the city up to the top to the castle there. And Paul goes in there, and he's going to tell more people about Christ, and he finds the Roman Agora. He goes, finds the marketplace, and he's buying his fruits and his vegetables because that's where you meet all the good people at the grocery store. And so he's in there, and he's talking to folks, and the problem is that they get angry, and they don't want to hear his story, and he keeps moving on, finding new places to share, but nobody wants to hear. And so Paul, he has to find refuge because the people are getting angry. They're turning into a mob. So he finds refuge at Jason's house, a friend of theirs, and Paul and Silas and Timothy together, they're in there with Jason, and they're safe. They've found their refuge. But the problem is that the mob follows them to Jason's house, and they want Paul to come out, and Paul's not going to do that because it's just not safe. So he escapes probably out the back door, and he's off and running while Timothy and Silas stay with Jason and explain to the mob that, don't worry, Paul's not even here anymore. This is our friend Joanne, and Joanne is basically part of our family now. We love Joanne. Joanne is from Aleppo, Syria, and he was there when things started to get really bad and the bombs started falling. And one day he was at home with his older brother and his younger brother, and his older brother heard that ISIS was coming into the city, and he said, "I can't sit here at home, I have to go and fight them." And so he went and joined a group that was going to fight ISIS, and he never came home. Joanne, to this day, he calls his older brother his last brother. They don't know what happened to him. They assume he probably died, but they don't know. Or maybe they won the little battle and ran off to safety somewhere else. Or maybe, worst of all, he was captured by ISIS and is now forced to fight with them rather than against them. But Joanne, he doesn't know. Something else you should know about Joanne is that he's not even Muslim. Joanne is Yazidi. The Yazidi people are an ancient people group, basically the Native Americans of Syria, to give a concept. They have an ancient religion. You cannot become Yazidi, you are born Yazidi, and that's the only way you can ever be Yazidi. So the Yazidi people, they of course face the danger of ISIS coming in, just like everybody else, but they have a second danger, and that is all the other Muslims, because the Muslims, they want to eradicate, extinguish the Yazidis. So they have attempted genocide many times over hundreds of years, trying to get rid of the Yazidi people. So Joanne is in danger from multiple groups, and it's not safe for him there. But Joanne, while he's sitting in his room in Aleppo, he starts listening to his radio. And he started going through the stations, and he found a Christian radio station being broadcast in Syria. And he started listening to this Christian radio station, and he said after 5 days of listening to the radio, he knew that he had to accept Jesus Christ as his Savior. So Joanne, by himself, in his bedroom, on his bed, accepted Jesus Christ as his Savior. Well, things started to, of course, get worse and worse in Aleppo, and so Joanne grabbed his younger brother, and they left. And they made their way across the water and found themselves, of course, in Greece. They found themselves in Thessaloniki. They met people from our church, and Joanne was able to find refuge, just like Paul did. He found refuge with our church family there in Thessaloniki and with our family too. We hope that we are a place of refuge for Joanne. He is so involved in our church. It's wonderful to see. He is on the worship team and he plays guitar and he helps teach us the Arabic words for some of our praise songs. We translate them over so that our Arabic people can sing along sometimes. So he teaches us a little bit so that we can sing. And he's a real blessing. Joanne is also our Arabic translator for our church services. And the people who speak Arabic hear Christ's message through his voice. And we are blessed to have him as part of our church family. He's also part of Josh's discipleship group that they do on Sunday nights. And he just wants to go deeper and deeper into the Bible to understand this new faith, and it's exciting to see his life changes. Well, Paul, he can't stay in Thessaloniki, so he keeps moving on. I can imagine, just me imagining, that he went maybe at night since he had to escape from Jason, so that's why we put the picture in black. And as he's crossing the sea, he looks up and he can see something really important in Greece, and that's Mount Olympus. Now, the Greeks believed that the gods would descend onto Mount Olympus. And so something that's very interesting in Greece is that one day it can be a beautiful sunny day, and you can look out and Mount Olympus is there in all its glory. It's a beautiful mountain. And then the next day, same sun, no clouds, it literally is invisible. It disappears to the human eye. I can only imagine it's to atmospheric changes or something, but it's a very strange phenomenon. So the ancient Greeks believed that if the mountain was invisible, it's because the gods had descended and that they were meeting there, and so they had to make it invisible to the human eye, you see. So I can imagine as Paul's going by there, he's thinking about all these Greek gods that supposedly meet on this mountain, and he's thinking, there's only one true God, and I know he's not on that mountain. So Paul makes his way down to Athena, modern-day Athens. He's got to try to find somebody else who will listen. He wants to share the story of Christ. So he finds himself again walking through the Roman Agora in the marketplace. That's where all the people are. And this one in Athens is right below the Acropolis. It's beautiful. He's trying to meet people and talk with them and share the story of Christ. But amazingly enough, they're not interested. And Paul walks through the portico. And at the portico is where they would have statues to all of their Greek gods, and they would have a plaque that described the name of the god and what they did, what they were god of. And so Paul, I can imagine, is walking through the portico, and he reaches the end, and there's one missing. And I can imagine you saying, well, what happened here? Where'd it go? Had they, what's going on? And he looks down at the inscription and it says, to the unknown God. Because, of course, if you're Greeks and you've got hundreds of gods, surely you've missed one, right? And so they've left a place empty in case they figure out who this one is. And so Paul, he thinks, this is it. This is the context that I'm going to use to tell the Greeks about this unknown God, because I know who that is. And so I can imagine that he's excited. So he goes and he stands on this little square stone. That's the bima. And the bima is where any poet, any theologian, anybody who wanted to share information with the people, they would stand on that stone and they would share with the people. Well, while Paul is standing up there, nobody wants to hear, and they start laughing at him and scoffing at him. They don't want to hear what he has to say. They don't want to hear his message because they have their own gods. They have the temple to Apollo. They have their wonderful amphitheaters where they do plays about the gods, and you know they're not interested. They've got the other temples. This is the temple to Diana, and it's just amazing that everywhere you look in Greece, there's a representation of a different god. They don't want another one. They don't want to hear. But finally, Paul is invited to share one more time, and he's invited to go up these steps. And these are the original steps. There's new stairs that they've built, but you can still go up these stairs. So Paul would have climbed these. And he goes to Mars Hill with the Acropolis behind him. And that is where he can share one more time his story about Christ, this unknown God that he knows about. And this is where Dionysius, he hears the message of Christ, and Dionysius believes. So Paul does have a convert, and he has a fellow believer after sharing up here on Mars Hill. So it is beautiful to know the story there. This is our friend Hamoudi. Hamoudi, he is 6 years old. Hamoudi was born in Syria. He cannot walk. He cannot talk. He cannot control the movements of his body. Hamoudi was born 3 months early, and he suffered extreme brain injuries at birth. Hamoudi's mom, Ghana, she was told and has been told many times by friends and family that he is a curse. He is born this way because she did not live the life that she was supposed to live. He is what she got because she was sinful. She didn't make good choices in her life, and so this is her curse. She's been told to get rid of him, to send him away, just to not keep him. And so that's what's happening with Ghana, and she has to make these decisions, and she loves her son. She doesn't want to get rid of him. And as things get bad in Aleppo, she knows a child like this doesn't face good chances in Aleppo to survive. And so she takes him and she makes her way across Turkey, and she gets to the water there, and she pays for a boat to cross for herself and Hamoudi, just a rubber raft. And she's told that they will be given life jackets when it's time to go. So she goes to get on her little rubber raft with the other people, and she finds out there are no life jackets. Well, there's no refunds given, so she has to make a decision, lose my money or go for it. So she picks up Hamoudi in her arms, and she got on the rubber raft. And she knew that if that sank, they would not survive. Hamoudi can't control his body. He would not be able to swim, and she could not hold him long enough to survive. Boats, they go down every day in the Mediterranean going from Turkey to Greece. Hundreds of people have died. So that was a risk, though, that she was willing to take. And luckily, thank God, they made it to Greece. And they made their way to our drop-in center. And it's funny because when they come into our drop-in center, there's something weird that happens, and that's everybody starts to argue and fight. And what's happening is that everybody wants to take care of Hamoudi, and we want to have the chance to feed him for the day, bathe him, do whatever Ghana needs, and we want to be with him, massage his arms and legs. He doesn't have good circulation, you know? And this day, Josh was with Hamoudi, and he just drove him in a circle eight around the church all day long, talking with him and praying for him. Ghana has never seen people love her child. And so it is just mind-blowing to her to see people love him. And she's hearing about this unknown God. She doesn't know the God that we worship. She doesn't have the same understanding of a God who loves all of his children. And so she is watching and she's learning and she's trying to figure out who these Christian people are, because she hasn't heard good things about Christians, and yet we're the only ones that love her son unconditionally, and she's taking note, and she's seeing it. One day, while Josh was preaching, the back door to the church opened, and in comes Ghana, pushing Hamoudi. The worship was already done. We were done singing, and Josh had already started. So I'm pretty sure they'll make good Nazarenes one day because they know how to show up late. But behind Ghana comes her boyfriend. We had never met him before. And behind her boyfriend comes her boyfriend's wife. Because in Muslim tradition, men can have up to 4 wives. So he only has 1.5, so I think he thinks he's doing pretty good. But they all 3 come, and they sit down together in the church service. And that Sunday, Josh was preaching on the love of God and loving our neighbors as ourselves. And they were listening to Joanne translate. And I can only imagine what they're thinking as they're learning about this unknown God, this God who loves them, and how we need to love our neighbors as ourselves. So it's a beautiful thing. The last day that Josh preached before we came back to the States, Ghana wasn't at church, but her boyfriend came with his wife, just the 2 of them, and they came and they sat and they listened to the message, and God is working in their lives, and they're not sure what they think about this unknown God, but they're listening and they're paying attention, and it's a real blessing. So finally, Paul comes down to Corinth. Corinthos is what they would call it in ancient days. But this is the city of Corinth. And Corinth is this beautiful city. It's an important city. It is known as a port city. So there is a canal that goes through Corinth, and it makes it possible for boats, ships to go from the Adriatic Sea into the Aegean Sea without going through the dangerous part of the Mediterranean. So all the fishermen, all the business people, they know about Corinth because they pass through there anytime they need to move their wares through Europe. And so Paul, this is where he goes, and he wants to share with them. But the problem is they don't really want to hear, because this is the city of Apollo. This is his temple in the middle of the city, and they're not interested in hearing anything. And so Paul, he goes to the Jewish synagogue, and he decides, I'm going to share with the Jewish people about the Messiah. And he starts to share with them, but they're not happy, and they don't like his message. And so they take him, and they chain him to the bema, the column that you see there, and he would be made to look up at the magistrate who would be sitting up on high. And the magistrate is supposed to, of course, decide on a punishment. But the problem is this magistrate in the city of Corinth, he did not care. He was not interested in the Jews. He didn't like them, and he thought they were just squabbling amongst themselves. He didn't want to waste his time, so he released Paul. But the Jewish people, they were pretty upset, so they grabbed their rabbi, their own pastor, they brought him out to the bema, and they punished him instead of Paul. So Paul escaped a beating there in Corinth, which is, of course, good for Paul. But as he begins to walk the streets of Corinth, he realizes that this is not actually the city of Apollo. And the reason why is because the city of Corinth is not where he's been walking through. The real city of Corinth is at the top of the hill up there. And so he says, okay, I've got to figure this out. So he begins to walk up the hills to the top of the mountain, and he makes his way up to the top to the Acrocorinth. The Acrocorinth is the real heart of the city of Corinth, and that's because this is where they worship their real god, and it's really a goddess. It's the goddess Aphrodite, and she is the goddess of love and other things. And so this is the true goddess of Corinth, and the thing that happens in Corinth is that the fishermen and the businessmen, while they're out on the sea and doing their trade, they're also committing sins. And so when they come to Corinth, they're looking for forgiveness. And Aphrodite, she can give that to them. So it's important that they pass through Corinth. So what happens is that they have to find a temple prostitute, and they have to have relations with the temple prostitute, and that gives them their forgiveness. But the problem is that just as we have human trafficking now, children were sold to the temple priestesses, and they were made into the temple prostitutes, and their heads were shaved, and they shaved their heads so that when they were out in the city, they could be easily identified so that you could find them for your forgiveness of your sins. And it also made them look the same. Boys and girls didn't look any different with a shaved head, and so it made it easier when people were looking for their services of forgiveness. It's a really hard context that Paul comes in contact with in Corinth. It's not what he expected. And he sees what's happening in the streets, and he sees these young prostitutes being used to provide forgiveness of sins, and I'm sure it makes him sick. And so Paul begins to speak to the people of Corinth about a God that doesn't require children to sacrifice themselves for forgiveness, that we serve a God that asks the children to come to him, right? And that we have a God who loves all of his creation equally. And it doesn't matter if you've lived a life of really big sin, and it doesn't matter if you've lived a life of small sin, but God loves us all just the same. And so I can imagine that as Paul is preaching in the synagogue there, that it's quite possible that he starts to see little shaved heads pop in the back door because they want to hear this message. They've never heard this before. They want to hear a message about a God that gave himself to forgive sins rather than asking them to give themselves to forgive sins. It's a powerful thought. But see, we have a problem that we tend to think that Paul's a misogynist, right? Because in 1 Corinthians 11, Paul speaks to the Greek women. These Greek women have this long, beautiful, thick, black hair. And he speaks to them and he says, your hair is not your glory. And then when you come to the altar of God, you need to cover your heads. So we think that Paul must hate women, right? That's what we think. But I think we should understand the context before we really start making that conclusion. Because as Paul is speaking about the love and forgiveness of Jesus Christ, he looks out and he sees these beautiful Greek women with their beautiful hair, and they're sitting here on the front row. But then he also sees in the back, he sees shaved heads coming in, and he sees what's going on. He sees these women and how ashamed they are of how they look. They don't look like the other women. And so they know that their shaved heads make it really clear who they've been serving and what kind of life they've been living. And so Paul says, your hair is not your glory. He says, women, cover your heads. Could it be that Paul is trying to teach the Corinthians a lesson there, the men and the women? We serve a God that doesn't matter if we have large sin or small sin, you know? When we're sitting in the front row of the church, or if we're in the back of the church, whether you've got beautiful thick hair like these Greek women, or whether we have shaved heads, it doesn't matter to God. And so Paul is telling women, cover your head. So when these women come in and they sit on the front row with their beautiful hair, they cover their hair. And when people with bald heads come in, they cover their heads too. And when we all make our way forward to the altar, we all look the same. There's no difference in us when we're in front of God. And it is a beautiful message that Paul is teaching. And I think it gives us a different concept than of 1 Corinthians 13, the chapter on love. Paul preached that to the Corinthians for a reason, because they had a skewed concept of love because they served Aphrodite. And I can imagine how powerful it was for the people of Corinth to hear the words of Paul when he's saying that love is patient, love is kind, love is not self-seeking, love holds no records of wrongs, love never fails. That's a powerful, powerful message to these people who have been serving Aphrodite. I'm going to tell you a last story about our Syrian friend. She hasn't given us her name yet. She's really quite quiet. This is a 60-year-old woman from Syria, and she tells a story of how she came to Greece. And she went shopping one day for her family, took her empty bags to go get groceries, and she leaves. And she leaves her husband and her adult children at home, and she goes. She's not gone that long, but while she's gone, ISIS comes, of course, to the house. And ISIS usually knocks on doors and gives people two choices. You can join them and fight for them, or you can die. And those really are your two choices. So her family made their choice, and they were killed. And she came home from grocery shopping to find her entire family dead in her home. And she knew there was nothing left for her in Syria. She had lost everybody. And so she made her way across Turkey, across the sea, and she has found her way to our drop-in center. And our hope is that she is starting to hear about the love of God through us and seeing love in action, and that she begins to understand this concept of love is patient, love is kind, love never fails. And it's a beautiful experience, and we're really praying for her as she really gets more involved in what's going on there. Finally, this is a picture of some of the guys at one of the refugee camps that we went to. Sports is an important part of our ministry. And I mentioned Ghana, and I mentioned her boyfriend. Well, he is the guy on the top row, second in from the left. He is involved in our church. He comes on Sundays, he comes to the drop-in center, and he's participating in our sports ministries, and we are praying for a radical change in his life. And we don't just do refugee ministry in Greece. It is a part of what we do, and I share the stories because God is doing some really amazing things in the refugee community. But we're also partnering with the Free Methodist Church there, and when we go back to Greece at the end of July, the pastor there, Pastor Mike, he's going to be moving out of ministry in the local church, and he's going to be focusing only on refugee ministry. And Josh, my husband, is going to be stepping into the senior pastor role there, and we're going to be taking the church forward from there. And that will become a Nazarene church in the future. And so we're excited about what that's going to be. We also have a group of women in the city of Mikrivolvi. It's a small town that's in between where we live and Philippi. And they want to start a Bible study, and they want to form a Nazarene church in their community. And so God is really doing great things, and we've got all of these ministries going on, and we need more missionaries. And so I just wanted to let you know that, you know, while we are missionaries doing this work, you guys are missionaries here doing your work. And I hope that God is calling somebody in here to full-time ministry and mission work. And if he's calling you, I hope you answer. But I need you to know that while we serve in Greece, we just serve on one mission field, but you guys all serve on two. You are called to minister right here where you're at, and God has called you here. He's placed you here, and you have ministry in your community, you have ministry in your jobs, in your schools. Be faithful doing that. But you also have a second mission field, and that is where we are at and where all other international ministry is happening through missionaries in the Nazarene Church, because without the faithful support of Nazarene Church members and Nazarene churches, we can't go and do. If we didn't have the support of our Nazarene churches, we would come home. And so this ministry wouldn't be happening the way it is. So I just really want to say thank you. Thank you for supporting us. Thank you for being part of two mission fields rather than just one. We don't take it for granted, and we appreciate you guys. So before we end, I have a video to share. And it's just one piece of one ministry for you guys to see to close up my time.
There's no smoke without reason. It's a sign of something wrong in my lungs. There's a poison I've been breathing in too long. There's no I, no I in me, and there's no you, no you in me. 'Cause I've been burned way beyond the third degree. 'Cause your words are like gasoline. You pour up the fire, and the bridges you burn, that's your wild dreams. It's just another thing going on.
Wow, who's ready to go to Greece? That's quite a different world over there. It's amazing, isn't it? Well, we do want to take an offering to help.